Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today is Senior Editor for All Things Green, John Snyder. What's going on, man?
Hey, just waiting for this storm front to roll in. It got really dark over here.
Well, it's interesting. In the times we've been sort of getting set up for this podcast, it is now getting dark over here, about 30 miles away from you. So, yeah, I guess it's a good sign to get right into it. We'll talk about the Volkswagen ID.4 all-wheel drive Pro, talk about the Lucid Air, the Mini Cooper hardtop. That's kind of a fun one. And we will talk about the Polestar 2 with the single motor. We'll go over the Rivian IPO. We will spend your money. We've got a mailbag question too. So let's get into the ID.4 Pro. This is the Pro is a little bit of a step up trim. It was, mine came in at about $40,000. Mine had all wheel drive, which adds another few thousand dollars to the total sticker price, to the original MSRP. It's pretty well equipped for what you get. The ID.4 has been a very interesting vehicle for me. I think it's been kind of the answer to the Mach-E from Ford. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely more Volkswagen's take on the electric vehicle segment. You know, we've both mm-hmm. driven this car, this crossover, a couple of times. All-wheel drive, for me, in my experience, didn't make a huge difference because I drove it in a very, like, temperate part of October before things got really, really crazy, kind of gnarly, like they might any minute here. Handles well, it's sporty, but I do have some gripes. The interior itself is fine, but like the infotainment, like not the way I want to live my life, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
And just again, like we've mentioned this off air, it's hard to tell sometimes if the car is on. And that's a challenge. So sort of just like quirky user interface things that just they kind of mess with you, you know, like you get in the car, it knows you're there, and you can just put it in reverse. Okay, some people might like that, but that's a little bit, that's kind of erasing 120 years of automotive interaction for me. Like, I'm not saying I need to get out and crank it to know the motor fires up, but like that part I didn't love. But overall, mm-hmm. I think it's a very, very compelling product for Volkswagen. It's a really good sort of first, you know, attempt at a mainstream EV like this. Overall, I do like it. I like it a lot.
It's definitely something that you have to get used to. If you haven't, you know, dabbled in EVs already, haven't sampled a few and some of their quirks, it's going to feel a lot different than any traditional car you've been driving in the past. Like you said, like you get in, there's no ignition switch or button or anything. Controls are all in weird spots. There's lots of touch controls, sliders for HVAC and things like that. And it just takes some getting used to. But once you get used to it, or once you get past, you know, digging through the menu and getting your phone set up and getting out of your parking spot and getting in the car and drive, once you're just going, it's a great car to drive. I've only driven the rear drive version. But it handles excellently. It handled much better than the Mach-E rear-wheel drive that I was comparing it against. I briefly drove the Mach-E GT Performance, and that sort of fixed a lot of those problems. Having a motor up front driving the steering wheels helps quite a bit. But yeah, in the base rear wheel drive ID.4 is really adept at handling and steering, and I imagine that in this car at least the all wheel drive doesn't do much to change that. It probably just makes it better, you know, when the roads get rough and slippery. Whereas in the Mustang, it actually improves the driving dynamics of the car on regular roads.
The ID.4 will offer you up to 260 miles of range. I think it's a pretty good value for what you get just looking at the different trim levels. In many configurations, it's a little bit cheaper than the electric Mustang. So I think there is a little bit of a value play there. You know, and I think, like we said, the average new price of a new car in the United States is like 41.
Last I looked, it was, I think, pushing 45,000.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that's probably a little inflation adjusted. Yeah. But if you could get an electric crossover that's pretty good sized for about 40, you know, then you add maybe a couple grand for all-wheel drive. Maybe you get a tax credit put on there. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, this is a very good value proposition. Let me put it that way. And it looks cool. Like, sitting, you know, I had the lights on when I pulled up to get, I went into this restaurant to get some takeout. I pulled up to the spot, like, right by the door where you can park. And I had just kind of left the lights on. And mm-hmm. just the grill was lit up. And the people sitting in the first booth were like, what is this guy doing? And it wasn't until I had ran in, got my food, and was putting it in the car, and I was like, oh, whoops. Hope you enjoyed the light show. But, you know, that's cool. You know, I think they did enough to make this thing feel special, which is what you have to do.
Yeah. And there's no third row option like the, you know, barely usable one, the Tiguan, but the interior space is on par with the Tiguan. It's really huge inside, it feels like. There's tons of room. Yeah, I like it quite a bit. I would choose this over the Tiguan for sure. And you know, that $7,500 tax credit is a great bonus. And yeah, you just got to pay the price of getting used to all its weird functions and quirks and controls.
yeah. It's, again, with this crossover, I feel like they kind of overthought it. They should have maybe made the inside just a little simpler and more intuitive. You know, the infotainment is pretty dense. It's, in that sense, it's a pain, you know, whereas like the Mach-E, you can change the car's driving settings with like two pushes in the infotainment system, you know? Mm-hmm. So to me, that's kind of how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, you know, that's the Mach-E. I mean, I think we both like it. You, I think, in your evaluations, put it a touch ahead, the Mach-E a touch ahead of it, which is where, yes, I would probably put them as well.
Yes. It's just Mach-E's a better all-around package, and, you know, you get that wicked acceleration that's just right. Fun. I mean, this, the ID4 is quick compared to, you know, your usual internal combustion car, but it's not as quick as the Mach-E.
Yeah, no, and I think that's, you know, that's, again, they're not going for the raw like performance here. They're, again, trying to make like a mainstream offering. I think their tagline is like an EV for everyone or something mm-hmm. like that. So I think that's the right move for Volkswagen. And then you have, you know, Ford is really trying to do something a little bit different, create maybe a halo for all of their electric vehicles with mm-hmm. the Mach-E. And I mean, traditionally, that's what Ford has done, is they use the Mustang and the F-150 to kind of like lead the way. And I think when you have cars like that in your portfolio, that's probably the way to do it.
100%.
So let's transition over to something a bit different, the Lucid Air. This is really an impressive machine. It, you know, it's almost in some ways hard to put it into words because it's very futuristic. The one I tested was $169,000. So, I mean, I've driven some expensive cars, but even that really is something. The horsepower is like 1111. Is what they list the max power at. It's really cool in that sense. I think what I would say with that is you get so much power. It's so much just like instantaneous torque. You know, the 0 to 60 is like in the threes. No, I'm sorry. I think it's in the, like, below the threes. That is just like, it's so quick that it's quick, you know, like you're not going to notice the difference between 2.5 and 3. It's a big car. It's kind of like E-class size with like S-class, like interior space and accoutrements, if you will. Mm-hmm. I like how futuristic it looks, but like it's also like it still looks like a little bit like a conventional car, and I think that's still nice.
Approachable.
Yes. So
I think they did a great job on the design, and you know, just without having to have a big engine, big chunk of metal under the hood taking up space, and being able to sort of place the pack into various modules and place those modules where they want around the vehicle, allowed for them to do some neat things with the interior and to make it quite spacious compared to its you know exterior footprint. And yeah, they nailed the design. I can't wait to see what they do with the Project Gravity, the SUV that's you know next up, and then I'm curious to see what comes out after that. But first things first, I gotta get in this car and drive it. 160 some thousand, you know, for you know 1,100 horsepower is, you know, it's too much in every way. But when they you know have lower powered, lower priced, you know, more reasonable, maybe you know, in the $70,000-$80,000 range, that'll be appealing to a lot of people, I think, especially with just you know how good this car looks, and it's just got tons of features, tons of range. I'm jealous. I can't wait to drive this thing.
One thing I really liked was the interior and the fact that it was very, it was gorgeous, but it was almost like, it was like simple in that sense. You know, there was like a curved screen in front of the driver, a couple other screens that like, you know, depending on like the information you need, whether like you need to know this right now, or you don't even really need to know this, you know, like infotainment, speed, all those different things that you know, you get. But it was also like, it reminded me of like old school luxury in some ways, you know, and that was sort of the vibe of the car. I've heard it described as almost French in that sense. And I wouldn't disagree with that, you know, or like French or like Swedish, Scandinavian, that sort of vibe. Yeah, I could
see that for sure.
And it was good. I think it was really, you know, like a wise choice for a company that is trying to, you know, I like make their mark, and like, you know, obviously they're trying to build awareness of who they are, but not everybody's going to be Tesla or Rivian or, you know, like Ford, you know, you want to have your own identity. So yeah. I think in that sense, it's, you know, smart move. I can't really give them enough credit for the, you know, the design aesthetic, but
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's, I will say this. Oh, I talk about burying the lead. I showed up for my test drive late, and when I eventually write my story, I will have to put this in there, but somebody was waiting in the car for me, which this might sound, maybe I'm leading this a little bit here, but it was John Lovitz, the actor, comedian. You might remember him from Saturday Night Live. I pull up to the valet at this hotel, and I talk to the PR guy. I'm like, hey, I'm here, it's 2 o'clock. And he's like, I'm sorry, John Lovitz is in your car. I'm like, okay. Super random. I didn't talk to him, so I guess I can't be like 100% certain it was him, but I saw him, I heard his voice, and I think we all know what John Lovitz sounds like.
Oh my god.
And then I looked it up. He was in town to play a show at the Comedy Castle or something. So I mean, circumstantially, I think it was him, and you know, that was my lucid experience.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's super random. I love it.
Yeah. When I get my review up, I'm gonna have to tweet at him and see. You know, yeah. See what he says. He was just sitting there. He was like, hey, this is a cool car, and talking to one of the handlers, and yeah, super random. But I look forward to getting more time behind the wheel of this car. I really think it's gonna do a lot for the industry. And I think there's a lot of things going on right now. Like, you know, we'll talk about the Rivian IPO here in a little bit, but it's it's just really a inflection point, you know, as some of these new startup companies, if you will, really get critical mass and try to, you know, gain consumer awareness. But
man, I want to read or watch John Lovitz's review of this car. I know he's, right? You know, he's quite the critic. So
see what you did there.
It's just, I can't believe it. That's really funny. Like I haven't thought about that guy in forever.
Well, so yeah. Random. So there's that, you know, it's not like exactly like, you know, like Brad Pitt or somebody like super famous, but somebody pretty famous gets out of the car and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Right. Anyone our age or older knows who he is for sure.
Yeah. No, I was telling my wife the story. She was like, I don't even believe that, you know, like that's super random. And yeah, it was cool. I don't actually think I got a picture of him in the car. I was getting like some video of the interior and other pictures, but I just, yeah. So
that's awesome.
How about we try and talk about the Mini Cooper real quick? You had the hard top. That's a good one to throw in here as a segue. Minis are always fun. You know, what did you do with it?
I just did a lot of errands with it.
Okay.
It's a hoot to drive around town, you know, zipping around. You know, I had to have both kids in it. So I had Wally in his front facing car seat behind me. And then I had Lola in a rear facing seat behind the passenger seat. And it was kind of tricky getting the seats in and getting them buckled, but you don't have to reach very far because it's small. It's just hard to get them past those front seats. And then whenever I wanted to buckle one of them, I'd have to go to the other side of the car and go in through that door and sort of go diagonally across the center console to strap them in. But but hey, it worked actually pretty great for getting kids around, even though, you know, Wally loved that he had to move the seat forward to get in.
Okay.
He just, every time he's like, no, I want to move the seat. But it's just such a joyful little vehicle. It's the first time in a while that I've driven a modern car with a stick shift. And so it's always nice to see that there's still some out there. And you know, it zips around, you got to sort of work with it to keep up speed, but it handles so well. The suspension is, you know, it's pretty stiff. It likes to sort of skip over bumps. And you know, it can be kind of twitchy. Yeah, it'll turn really quick on you. It's just fun. It's a hoot, and it looks cool. I really like it. Mine was green with these white racing stripes, and they've improved some of the interior and the user interface. It seemed easier and more intuitive than before, while still maintaining a lot of that charm, like the big round dials and the actual switches for things. It was fun. I would daily drive one of these, as long as I could just leave the car seats in and not have to take them out all the time. I was able to put a bunch of chicken feed and stuff in the back. You know, it's got a really deep storage area. And,
well, that's interesting. I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah. So the load floor lifts up and it's really deep, like you see in a lot of minivans. And you can stack stuff up pretty high that way. You don't have a lot of depth. I mean, you know, like fore to aft depth. You've got some width, and you've got some like, you know, up and down depth to work with, though, which it was pretty nice.
The one thing I like about driving a Mini is just that very like analog traditional feel driving a British sports car. Called a British sports car, right? I mean, they're very authentic. I think over the years, you know, they've been able to generally remain true to that. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see them get a little quirkier again. Like, you know, they used to have things like the openometer when you could see how long your convertible was open. Like, I miss stuff like that. And you know, maybe there's not as much of a purpose for it, but you know, I thought that really helped, especially with the loyalists, the enthusiasts who, like, you know, are buying a Mini because they want to know quirky stuff like that.
Yeah, like the Mini Coupe was really cool. The Mini Roadster was cool too. I remember I drove the Mini Paceman, which was a weird thing. I drove that in Puerto Rico. But yeah, they have done some quirky things with the car, and I think, you know, the traditional format and then the Countryman are the ones that, you know, are the volume sellers. So they just sort of fall back on that, and it's fine. Those are great formats. Those are great cars, and they have tons and tons of charm, and they're fun to drive. They're legitimately a joy to drive.
So the Polestar 2, continuing with our theme here of you know, reviews that are electric, interesting vehicle. I drove the one with two motors a couple of weeks ago. You drove the one with the single motor. I'm interested to hear your take on this.
Well, you know, visually, it's essentially indistinguishable from the double motor, as you would expect. But like, really, like the interior and everything, I got in a very base version. So this didn't have like the glass roof, and had these you know, very nice cloth seats. But otherwise, you know, it looks, I mean, from the outside, it looks exactly the same. Maybe if you're looking really closely at wheels, you might notice a difference. Driving it, you know, it's front wheel drive. And it's definitely slower than the all-wheel drive by quite a bit, which is not to say it's slow. This is like normal. The dual motor is quick, very quick, you know, not quite as good a traction as the dual motor, as all-wheel drive. But still, the energy, you know, the takeoff was not so much to constantly be overpowering the traction of the front wheels like you would in, say, a Chevy Bolt. You know, that wants to spin its tires at the drop of a hat, just so much torque. This is a little more modulated, but it's still, you know, plenty quick, plenty powerful. But otherwise, it's very, very similar, you know, and especially in terms of you know, the feel from sitting in the driver's seat, or, you know, just living with the car and looking at it. There's really not a lot different. You feel, it still feels like this, you know, very nice EV with sort of that stealth Scandinavian vibe to it. And
that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, I would, you know, if I were buying one, I would probably buy the all-wheel drive one. It's one of those ones where I think it's worth the extra money for the extra power you get. It would be perfectly fine driving in the winter with winter tires, but just that extra power of the all-wheel drive is just so fun. That car is just, it feels like some sort of machine out of Star Wars or something. It's very cool. I love it. I would definitely consider personally owning a Polestar 2 if I were looking for a daily driver for myself.
When I drove the two motor version, and, you know, it sounds like, aside from, again, the powertrain experiences, you know, the general demeanor of the car, it's pretty similar. I do like that stealth Scandinavian vibe. People were looking at it. I think they weren't quite sure what to make of it. Because, like, if you notice it, you know, it's a pretty innocuous car. If you, like, if you notice it, though, it probably means you have some sort of, like, you know, foot in the car industry or you like cars. And then you're like, wait a minute, Polestar, what's that? So I think that's cool. And I think it could be, you know, my thought, too, is maybe on, like the South and in the coasts where, well, not like the East Coast, but like, you know, California where you don't have much snow, this could really be a good value proposition, you know, because you don't need all wheel drive. In this climate, I would definitely want the two motors, even though to your point, snow tires always solve that old age problem, age old problem. But, you know, I think I would also go for the two motors just to get that real kind of like, it reminds me a little bit of like an Audi with that Quattro feel, where it's not just for the sure-footedness, but for performance. And even like the idea of, you know, you really had this capable machine. And I like that feel when I was driving it. It really, like I would stack the Polestar 2 I drove up or drove up against any Audi or something like that. Not any Audi, but it's serious.
Yeah. And, you know, it's such a great handling car. And you know the dual motor handles that power really well. You know it's very well sorted. You can really toss it around. It's got just tons of grip. Yeah, it just feels so planted and solid and fun. And it's cool. It's different than other cars without being loud about it. You notice it not because there's something crazy going on, but because it's just different than what you're expecting. You look at the front of the car and you expect to see maybe a grill and an emblem, but this is all very, you know, like stealth. It's just real dark and mysterious, and it's super fun.
I agree with you as far as like especially the front end, not to get too deep in the like design aesthetics, because obviously you could look at the pictures, but it's like I like it, I would say, as much as any like Volvo. You know, in recent years, Volvos are like really blinged out. This is kind of, or they can be. This is, you know, a little more subtle. And mine had the panoramic roof, which is really nice. My son loved it. You know, another thing that I noticed, too, is the steering. I really like the steering. It was kind of loose, kind of light, but it was also, and I think that's okay. You know, and everything doesn't have to be on the cutting knife's edge of severity.
Right.
It was very approachable, but it still allowed you to really, like, communicate with the car.
Yeah.
I think they did a very good job with the chassis.
Yeah, it's the steering's precise without being, you know, super high effort or, you know.
And I like that.
Yeah,
that,
I do too.
That can be a good feel.
I do too. And, you know, you've got this car with this big battery in the bottom. You can sort of feel that there's a little extra weight there, but yeah, that center of gravity is just so low that it just doesn't lean a lot in the corners. It stays pretty flat and transitions really well from, you know, one turn to the next. I like it quite a bit. And one other thing about this car that I really, really like is its infotainment. I like the Android automotive operating system that powers its infotainment.
Yes.
I've been a Mac user for the past decade and a half and been an iPhone user for the past several generations of phone. I've never been an Android user. And how seamless and smart this is, the Polestar's infotainment really makes me want to consider moving over to Android, especially like the Google Assistant, the Siri of Google is really good. It's really good at understanding what you're trying to say. You can use pretty natural language. It's fast, very fast to respond, and it responds with useful things. You know, it finds, like, if you want look for an Indian restaurant nearby, it finds it real quick, and the results aren't, you know, muddied up with a bunch of other, you know, stuff that maybe you're not looking for. Yeah, I like it quite a bit. And if you are like an Android user, it's sort of a seamless transition from you know, whatever you're doing on your phone to, you know, whatever you're doing in your car, whether you're listening to music or whatever. You know, it's got some of those apps built in. It just sort of carries over your profile, which is cool.
So I am basically identical to that, exactly what you just said. I've always had iPhones, generally been a little like not a fan of really anything Android. Mm-hmm. I did get a Pixel, like, geez, I guess it was 2 years ago now at this point. And I've started to like it. I don't like as much as like knowing just the data tracking and all the stuff Google knows about you. But, you know, it's a nice warm-up, if you will. And it's a really beautiful phone.
Yeah.
But it's a nice warm-up for this car. And I was immediately comfortable, really liked the benefits of it. That said, I probably would switch back to an iPhone because my phone's smashed.
Yeah.
So I probably would go back. But I do appreciate the Android experience now.
Mm-hmm.
100% with you, with like the assistant. I was trying out the different features. I needed to go to Meijer to get my flu shot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, I don't know how much time I have. Let's let the car tell me the fastest way. Could not believe how seamless it was.
Yeah.
It was even quicker in the car than on my phone, I thought.
Yeah, it's uncannily quick. And yeah, just super smart. And you know, it's a big screen.
Yeah.
One complaint I could find is that, you know, some of the icons are a little small.
Yes, I agree with that.
Some other, you know, other vehicles, you know, bigger tiles, it's easier to, you know, select what you want while you're driving. That said, the layout is super clean. You know, they took, again, that sort of Swedish design and applied it to the user interface of this infotainment system, and it looks really good. So yeah, some of the icons are small, but they're easy to spot, and they're very well organized, and you can sort of organize things how you want them.
What I would say too is it reminds me of, we were talking earlier in the show about the Volkswagen ID.4 and that infotainment user experience. This takes I would say, put it this way, on the spectrum of things, this isn't as intuitive as, say, like Uconnect with the Stellantis vehicles, or say even like the Mach-E, which we were mentioning. You can change the car's dynamics with a couple pushes of a button.
Mm-hmm.
But this is pretty good. Like it is reasonably intuitive, and you can pick it up pretty quickly. And I think it's a good example, frankly, of what Volkswagen, they should have done something like this. You know, make your futuristic car feel futuristic, but, you know, don't overthink it. And if you look at some of the, like, our coverage and other coverage of the Polestar 2 and this Android Auto system, they're like, hey, we're not an infotainment company. We don't have the back end tech.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have what we've been putting in our cars for years, and it's about as good as anybody else. But we also know that Google kind of runs the internet, mm-hmm. and runs these things right now. We're to let them do it for us. And I think that's a very, self-aware approach. Car companies have done that in the past. Ironically, Volkswagen actually did a few years ago with their Apple CarPlay and Android Auto experience, when they made that the basis of their infotainment. They were among the first to do that. And since then, they've kind of gone back and expanded and done different things. But I remember for a couple model years, I think even in one of our tech of the years back in like 14, we just tested Apple CarPlay and Android Auto in like the Passat or something, because it was such a pure experience. And mm-hmm. Executing that notion is tough, but I think, you know, I like what Polestar is doing here. Makes sense. Yeah. Focus on the EV and the design.
Yeah. And now, you know, others are going to be using the Android Automotive as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, Volvo.
Yeah.
but also GM is putting it in cars. It's starting with the Hummer, I think. And we'll get to see. It'll be interesting to see how Google sort of refines its technology as it, you know, it gets more experience in using it specifically for cars. So far, I think they're off to a great start.
Yeah, so that's the Polestar 2. I think we both enjoyed it.
Yes.
So I know we both enjoyed it. Let's talk about the Rivian IPO, kind of keeping with the green tint of this podcast.
Yeah.
They went public yesterday.
Yeah.
Officially official. They're worth more than like Scrooge McDuck's money bin, I guess. I don't know. The numbers are just astronomical. We have coverage on our site. Check it out. What do you think? I'll just throw it to you. You're the green editor.
Well, we're speaking to you right now from after market close on Thursday. And as of right now, Rivian's valuation is $120 billion, which is insane. You know, the only other U.S. automaker that beats that is Tesla, which is $1 trillion, which is insane. But GM is about $90 billion. Ford's at about $78 billion. It's just crazy. Rivian just hit the ground running. They've got, you know, all that financial backing from Amazon, and you know, it's more than just, you know, the R1T and the R1S. They're going to be doing commercial vehicles, and it's going to be, they're going to make a lot of actual vehicles, a lot of examples of cars rolling down the street, cars, trucks, vans. It's wild. I'm curious to see if Rivian will sort of fall into this sort of meme stock category.
Yeah. You never know.
You never know. But I mean, so far I think it's just a company with a lot of promise. There's probably some growth already built into that stock price. It's closed at $123.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is just like, that's crazy. I mean, right now, maybe this is kind of a little bit of a far-fetched comparison. I feel like companies like Rivian are almost like the crypto of, you know, like the car equivalent of the market. It's like this new thing that some people just want to get into it because it's new, it's different.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a little too extreme of a comparison because this is still a car company.
No, I mean, there's fairness.
It's got
there.
That kind of buzz.
Yeah. And it's going to, I suspect it's going to be volatile for a while, at least at first, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, Tesla stocks has gone all over the place too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly up, but in very extreme ways.
Well, I mean, Jeff Bezos got a little richer yesterday because Amazon has a stake in Rivian, which that makes some sense. They have a contract with them to use Rivian. I guess it's going to be vans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's cool.
Really,
it's, I think like Amazon and Rivian are kind of looking a couple steps ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a really unlikely one. Ford made like a few billion, right? Like, because they still own a good amount of stock in Rivian back when it looked like they were going to partner together and use that Rivian skateboard for like, I think truck and like Lincolns. And it seems like they've backed off of that. I don't even sure where that alliance sort of stands. But Ford really threw an elbow to get General Motors because they were the original sort of like partner for Rivian. Mm-hmm. And Ford got in there. So, I mean, this is the kind of stuff we haven't seen in 120 years, you know, where like startup automakers are like, you know, competing like this. They're like, they're listing stock. This is exciting stuff. I think this is really cool.
It's going to be fun to watch. Really fun to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Yeah, that's the Rivian IPO. Check out our coverage. I'll throw a shout out to our friends over at Yahoo Finance. I actually appeared on them as the Tesla stock went, not the Tesla, the Rivian stock went live. Nice. It was a really wild, like real-time experience. Like the stock like hit the exchange.
Yeah.
And then I was waiting in the like the virtual green room, the Google Hangout. And they're like, oh, we're going to go to Greg Migliori. And I'm like, got to get the camera on. And I just like let the dog out, if you will. So a little behind the scenes stuff there. But it was super cool to do it just like so live like that. And I mean, for me, it was personally exciting. But it also like, it felt like a big moment. You know, this is a like a historic moment for the industry. And, you know, I thought it felt cool. It's like one of those things where there's sort of like big days and little days. And, you know, I think yesterday was kind of a big day. I mean, Ford didn't go public until the 50s, right?
Right.
You know, they were around for half a century. Now, some of that was the family wasn't ready to do that. But it's an intriguing milestone. And I mean, Rivian, Lucid that we talked about earlier, you know, Bollinger, Fisker, who am I leaving out here, right? Like, it's a really interesting time for these startup automakers who are, you know, in the electric space.
And it's good to see some get some footing too. You know, we've seen a lot that have, you know, showed maybe promise at first, but then had false starts. Faraday Future,
the first Fisker.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's good to see, you know, Rivian and Lucid getting off on the right foot. And I think those two companies specifically are going to have some staying power. In part just because they're building great products, just fantastic products, really exciting cars.
I will give a lot of credit to some of these even newer electric vehicle companies because they're really getting the goods out quickly, you know, like Lucid and Rivian, for example. Now, these are both a little older than perhaps we knew. Yeah. Like, they didn't come out of thin air. Rivian's 12 years old, right?
Yeah, Rivian was so, stealth for very,
like,
very long
time. Tesla's only, like, 17 or something, you know? I mean, it's... but it's a really interesting time in the business.
Sure is.
All right, should we go to the mailbag?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Earl writes in, hey guys, I was considering it, but I decided against it. I think this could be an interesting question though. Okay. I have a 2018 Tesla Model 3 that I bought for $38,000. I've had it for a year and was wondering if it would be worth trading in for a newer model, like a Model 3 or an equivalent EV. I think it's an interesting question because Model 3s are in high demand and in some cases they might actually appreciate in value. So this is a spend my money. You know what? We basically have two spend my money. Mm-hmm. So that's all good. I will toss it over to you. Do you think it's kind of worth going to the trouble of trading in this 18 Model 3? Or, you know, I don't know.
It depends on how much you like the car.
Yeah.
If you like it enough that you want to buy another Model 3, I would probably just keep the one you've got.
Yes.
The wait times, you know, on a new one are pretty long. And who knows what's going to happen with car values in that amount of time. And if you don't like it at all, then yeah, sell it and get something else. But if you're just going to get another Model 3, unless there's some feature that you didn't get on your 18 that is just driving you absolutely nuts, and it would be the perfect car if it had this one option, I would just stick with that one, or sell it and get a Polestar.
I totally agree with you. If you like the car, like, just the world, inflation, everything's crazy right now.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd trade in like an 18 Model 3 like in 2021, like, if you're happy with it. If you're like, maybe there's something else out there that you want to get on a waiting list for, like maybe you want a Lightning or you want to try and get one of the like the lower rung Lucids. I mean, lower rung is I think 69 or something like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe you want a different Tesla. Then yeah, using the Model 3 as sort of collateral could work. You know, use it to get something else you really want that's new or different. Cadillac Lyric, I don't know. You know, one of the electrified Jeeps, then yeah, you play that card if that's what you want to do. But if you're happy with the car and all you're going to do is flip it for a Model 3, another Model 3, I wouldn't do that. I think I could be wrong, but I know Tesla has OTA updates. I don't know if it's like universal, like for his specific Model 3, right. But I wouldn't flip it. And I like the Model 3 too. Like it would be in my top probably five of EVs to consider. You know, it's a little small for my personal use, but I think it's a neat little car.
There's some very compelling things about it. It's performance and its range.
Yeah.
Big draws for it. But then there are other things that, you know, it's people either love it or hate it, you know, like not having an instrument cluster for one thing. You might get one with some weird paint patches or some weird panel gaps, but you might not, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
If you do want to like walk into a dealer and throw down your Model 3 and get a Lightning or something, then hey, your car is never going to be worth more than probably this second right now. But again, like I said, if that's not the case, I wouldn't flip it for like a 2022 Model 3.
Right.
So Earl says he already decided against it, but he didn't exactly, I guess, say what the final outcome was. So hey, if you're listening, let us know what you're going to do next. You're going to buy something else. Thanks for writing. This is actually a really good kind of thought exercise.
Yeah. I was sort of stumped at first when I first looked at this, but then I thought it through and yeah, it's, there's some nuance there.
It's interesting because with an electric car, it's different, you know, because maybe you want to try a different EV. Maybe you want something larger. If you were just like, should I get an 18? I have an 18 Acadia. Do I want to get a 22 GMC Acadia? Then no. But it's interesting with how they're playing this.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's move on to Nick. This is the actual spend my money because we have real live money to spend here. Nick writes in, I've started listening to your podcast and I really enjoy it. Thank you. I'll be done paying off my car in the next month or so. I want to get a truck. I was really interested in the Ford Maverick, specifically the one with the FX4 trim. Also been looking at older Nissan Frontiers, 2012 to 16, the Chevy Colorado in the same general model year. Mm-hmm. The money he's looking at is about 25 grand to 28 grand. Wondering if it would be a better deal to go with a brand new Maverick or an older truck with about $60,000 to $90,000. I don't do a lot of towing or hardcore off-roading, but I'm moving to Colorado in a year and would like to be able to go off the beaten path a little bit. I wasn't sure if the Maverick, even with the FX4 trim, would be suitable. Thanks for any advice. Keep doing what you're doing. Well, thanks, Nick. Thanks for writing. This is, I would say, slightly even harder, like the next challenge unlocked, than Earl's question, because it really is a thought starter, a thought provoker. Mm-hmm. So I could go a couple different ways, but I guess I'll see what you think first.
You know, it's tough. I really like the Maverick. I think it's just a fantastic truck. Mm-hmm. I drove the FX4 version and thought it was pretty capable. I did a small, like, just, you know, half mile off-road loop on some mud and ruts and up some a stone path. But it's got a good suspension. And it's got all the underbody protection, which is nice. And then it's got all the smart features that the Maverick has, you know, the cool bed and the really thoughtful interior storage and sort of neat design and really good drivability. With the FX4, you have to pay for you know, the EcoBoost and all-wheel drive. So there's that. But I don't know. I'm really drawn to the Maverick. I would probably go with the Maverick. Although if you found a good deal on something else that had, you know, some of that off-road capability or, you know, would be easily upgraded to provide the off-road capability you want, sure, but the Mavericks a pretty safe bet. I think the Maverick all-wheel drive, even without the FX4 package, is going to be good enough to get you to your campsite or, you know, your spot in the woods where you're hunting blind or whatever. FX4 will get you a little further out. And you know, the extra, it's got the extra modes. It's got a sand mode and a mud mode. I would go with the Maverick. I'm saying Maverick.
Okay. So that's I think a very fair one. And after kind of looking at this a couple different ways, I think I would go Maverick with the FX4. That's mm-hmm. how I would do it, because I guess what I would say is, he's moving to Colorado, and one of our senior producer, Chris McGraw, lives in Colorado, and he goes all out into the wilderness. I don't think he has a super capable vehicle. I think he just has like a Subaru Crosstrek, which is very capable, or can be. But I feel like I'd go with the FX4 just because it does give you some things that, might give you that extra sense of confidence. You know, you get, there's some sort of off-road suspension tuning. I don't quite exactly know what that means, but that usually means you get a nice kind of ride and handling with it. That's maybe a little bouncy, jouncy on road. And then obviously what you want off road, you do get larger tires, and things like hill descent control, things like that. I don't know how serious, you're going to be if you need that sort of stuff, but, it's there for you. And you do get some underplating too, like some skid plates, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So, you know, that could work. I would also, so that'll be my choice. If you could get like a used Chevy Colorado without too many miles mm-hmm. and one of the off-road packages, maybe look at that too, because that's very capable. So, and you're moving to Colorado, right? So, So Nick, let us know how it works out. We love talking trucks, especially small trucks. There's a lot of nuance there.
Let me see. I'm looking at the configurator right now. The cheapest you can get the FX4, because you got to get the EcoBoost, you got to get all wheel drive, and I think you have to do the XLT, which is the middle trim level or higher. So the cheapest you can get it is about 28,000, and that's that's a brand new car with a warranty, and and it's a really good truck. I think looking at the price here, it's just such a fantastic truck. I'm not sure how Ford's gonna keep up with demand. There's just gonna be so many people buying these things.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a very universal truck. It still feels like a truck. Mm-hmm. The inside has almost like a contractor's kind of vibe, like mm-hmm. the different cubby holes and so many different places. We actually went and got, I forget what we got, but it had a million like pops and milkshakes, and we just filled up all the cubby holes with chicken nuggets and, you know, fries and things like that. So it's a very functional interior like that. This is going to muddy the waters a little bit. Also look at a Ranger. They're expensive in the used market, especially if you want to get the FX4 Ranger. Uh-huh. But that's going to be pretty capable for you if you want that vibe. You probably don't need as much truck as a Ranger is, which is kind of a funny statement. But I think I'm thinking Maverick here.
Yeah. And the FX4 package itself on the Maverick, you do have to get those prerequisites, but the package itself is only $800.
It's a good deal.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you can't get it with the hybrid. That'd be cool. But, you know, you get those cool wheels, those nice tires. You get tow hooks on it. You get those sick decals. I'm a sucker for decals. Those extra modes, the actual usable driving modes and that upgraded suspension that's going to stand up better to dissipates heat better than the standard suspension, so you can play a lot and not wear out on you.
I like the idea of a new vehicle because I feel like these might be better values than something on the used car market, just factoring in inflation,
true,
how hard it is to get stuff. So that also is sort of a like a mark in the Maverick's favor.
True, true.
So
yeah, Maverick.
If you want to give a mark in the Autoblog podcast's favor, please leave us a please send us your Spend My Money. That's podcast@autoblog.com. Leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to our newsletter. We'd love to get more readers on that who are engaged with our daily, daily articles and videos and all that good stuff. Be safe out there, and we will see you next week.